And welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We'll have Adam Vingan from The Athletic joining us at 9:30. We'll get into the latest with the Nashville Predators with him. Thanks to Matt Duchesne for joining us in the last segment. And we'll have a lot to discuss on the Preds coming up, so make sure you're tuned in for that. But Joe, our topic of the day here on our poll question revolves around the news that came out yesterday shortly after we got off the air, EA Sports announcing they're coming back out with a college football video game. Now, the NCAA football video game has not been there and not been made since, I think, 2013, which is actually the 14-titled game that came out then with Denard Robinson on the cover. So it's been a while since they've made a college football game. And they missed out on a lot of great cover athletes since then, too.
Denard Robinson, September Heisman winner. Michigan has Heisman winners.
There's a few of those that over the last decade plus.
Tate Forcier.
Oh, I forgot about that guy.
So many September Heisman winners.
There's a lot of them. But as you can imagine, and as we've seen so far on the poll question, that was met with a lot of excitement yesterday, the NCAA video game coming back. And it got us wondering, which sports video game did you or do you connect with the most? So you could take it modern. You can go back and throw it back to the Tecmo Bowl, the Super Tecmo Bowl,
like Joe Rexrode has done.
The options on the poll question are this: NCAA football, Madden, NBA 2K, or you could list an other option below. And we've got several of those. 68% going with NCAA football, only 16% with Madden, which I am shocked by, 2% with NBA 2K, and then a lot of other selections as well. You've got Tecmo Bowl, NHL 94, NHL Hits. There was an NHL Hits vote. That was an awesome game. NBA Jam, Tony Hawk. I mean, they go all over the map in the responses here. You were a big Super Tecmo Bowl guy.
Super Tecmo Bowl is the height of all video games. And if you haven't played it, then don't talk to me about it.
Absolutely.
But my close number two is Sega Hockey or NHL 94, as Willie Donick also added his input. Chris Mason liked that tweet, so us guys of a certain age are all in agreement on that one. That was amazing. And I do want to give a little shout out, if we're talking hockey games, to Blades of Steel.
Blades of Steel was great. Now
if you got good at that game, you know, you play the computer, you can score like 30 goals in a game. So, you know, it's a little bit much.
Yeah.
You time it out with the goalie. The goalie slides one side to the other side. You time it out. You go nuts.
The competitive balance wasn't quite there.
But still, like, Blades of Steel. I mean, just that alone was cool. And also, Dumple Dribble. Great game.
Yes.
You get the, you get up, you go up for a dunk, and it gives you the close-up of the dunk. I was the Knicks in that game. Good times. I don't think they had real player names. No, I don't think they did.
Well, we had some listeners point out the Bill Walsh college football game
earlier. Yeah, would have forgotten about that,
which
totally
is amazing. I did forget about it totally, but now that people have brought it up, I've looked back at it. I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember that thing. I think
did I play it one time.
Did you?
Okay.
Yeah.
How did it compare to this game that everybody's going
gaga about?
It
does not compare at all. Yeah. But this game is awesome, and it feels like, to me, college football is back in its rightful place with this game back in the fold. And it has you asking the question, what does this mean for college football? Not this, I guess, specific case immediately, talking about, you know, the video game itself, but just the idea of name, image, and likeness, the changes that appear to be coming in that area. We've talked about the one-time transfer rule as well. It looks like lots of changes coming up for the NCAA in terms of athletes and, you know, how they're able to maximize their time with their football programs or basketball programs, whatever sport you want to choose. And to your point earlier, I think the NCAA is doing everything it could possibly do to limit how far this is going to go. But there's going to be some pretty major changes coming with name, image, and likeness in the fold.
Yeah.
And it's going to be really fascinating to watch.
Yeah, the NCAA can take a hike. And when this first came out yesterday, my first reaction was, oh, so they're getting a cut then, right? But, of course, I think – first of all, if things go as we think they'll go, then we will see maybe even a new level, exactly how it should be. We will see actual named players for these teams, and we will see negotiations, and we will see players getting a cut, which is how it should have been all along, rather than this. You know, it's the same thing as the campus store that sells the quarterback's number. Everybody buy it. All the little kids wear, you know, the Tennessee 16, you know, and Peyton Manning doesn't get a cut. Of course, you know, you can say, well, Peyton Manning did just fine. Yeah, he did. Some guys don't go make tens of millions of dollars in the NFL. So this is the same sort of thing. You got the player who looks like the player and has the same skill set of the player and has the same number as the player, but not named. So it's not him, right? It's just sort of like him.
But when you enter the name in the edit profile or edit player, then Brad Nessler magically knows how to say the name.
Yeah. Oh. The magic of technology.
Amazing. How about that? So now we could have the real, the whole thing. The whole thing. Get a cut to the players. Get their names. That would be even better, right?
Yeah.
It would be an even better game than it was before when they were, you know, getting around that crap.
That's what I'm worried about. Hey, don't screw this up. I've got some high expectations coming back with this stuff. Don't screw it up, EA.
So if they, because obviously we don't know, we don't have a time frame, right?
It's not going to be this year. We know that.
So if it comes out, and whatever happens with name, image, likeness, let's say it comes out and it's like the generic way. You're still excited, I'm assuming.
Yes.
Like, but again, like your Alabama quarterback is just generic QB.
10.
There's no Mac Jones skill set or Tua skill set. It's just,
yeah,
whatever.
I mean, it
wasn't that a big part of the appeal of the game that you actually, it was like you were playing the current college football team?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that is a big part of it. Like, I've got NCAA Football 06 on the original Xbox, and you can go, like, I played it the other day. You got the quarterback for Texas, it's number 10, it's Vince Young. I mean,
right.
Running back for USC is number 5, it's Reggie Bush. Like, you know who these guys are playing. I mean, Gerard Mayo on defense for Tennessee. I mean, they're all there. You know who they are. If it's just generic numbers and players and they don't match up skill set wise, that will take away from it for me.
When did this game start? Do you know?
I believe the very early 2000s.
Okay. So like that version, for example, was one of the earlier versions.
Yeah.
Because it's amazing when you describe it like that. That it took like Ed O'Bannon until like 2009 to sue. Like,
well, it's like,
how is it not an immediate lawsuit?
Like, you go back to 06 and like quarterback 10 for Texas is a 98 overall and he can run really fast and throw the ball and he's going to win the Heisman Trophy. I'm like, okay, yeah, that's Vince Young. Cool.
Great. Yeah. I mean, it's incredible.
Tennessee quarterback by Eric Ainge and Rick Clawson in that game. It's great stuff.
Wow. How are they also, is it like Madden with the rating? Like the player's a 93, 98 type thing?
Yeah.
Okay. What was Vince Young?
He's a 98.
I mean, what was quarterback?
Yeah, quarterback 10.
QB Longhorns. You know, with the Tecmo Bowl, there were a few of the NFL guys who didn't agree to like the
name part of it. Yeah.
So you had like, there's no Jim Kelly. There's QB Bills. There's no Bernie Kosar. There's QB Browns. There's also no Randall Cunningham. There's QB Eagles. Other than that, you got all the names, and they get a cut how it should be.
Yeah, we'll see. Like, how do you think – because obviously, like, paying all these college players to be a part of this game, you're not going to be able to pay them a huge amount of money going into this. What do you think that could look like in terms of a licensing agreement? I mean, it's not much.
Yeah, it's a great question. Yeah, I mean, when it comes down to it, what's the – and again, we're talking about – conferences, you know, negotiating here. So I don't think it's going to look like, I mean, it probably should, but it's not going to look like, let's think of like someone who's going to be like a returning star next year in college football. A lot of them are leaving, but you know, a returning star for, yeah,
John Metchie,
let's say Travis Etienne just keeps coming back to college for whatever reason, you know, like he should get more of a cut, right? But he's not going to, but at least it's something. I mean, negotiate, and if they get that something, then that player can go out and do his own ad and make more because he's a star player. And then on and on and on. And then at this little time of your life, when you have this really brief chance to market yourself and make money off your skills and your hard work, you can do it because it's the United States of America.
Yes,
I would love to play NCAA football for next year's game because then I can enter the name for QB number 5 for Clemson, and Brad Nessler will magically say DJ
Uiagalelei.
There you go. What Robbie said.
Well done.
I'm never going to forget that name.
Yeah, I mean, I worked on that for a little while when he was playing. But
Ooh, I'm gonna lay.
You got it, man. I think so. Although I've heard a few different interpretations.
Well, we've heard several different interpretations, a lot of which are wrong when it comes around that inning.
I mean, if
ukulele,
yeah,
ukulele.
If Chase McCabe did it and Tennessee's linebacker came back, we could hear about Henry Twa. Et like, toi?
Look, I've seen a lot of people butcher his name. That one was good.
That was amazing, Chase.
Look, we've all done it. It's all good. We love you, Chase McKay. It's what we're here for. When we come back, we'll switch gears back into the Preds. Adam Vingan had a sit-down interview with a phone interview with David Poile and asked him some very interesting and direct questions. We'll discuss that when we come back. Adam will also join us at 9:30, so looking forward to that conversation. All that coming up. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Preds fans, join us tonight from 6 to 7 p.m. from Smashville for Smashville Live, featuring Matthew Olivier and Philip Forsberg, hosted by Robbie Stanley, that's yours truly, and C-Mace, Chris Mason, joining us tonight on Smashville Live. Smashville Live airs every Wednesday on 102.5 The Game during the Preds season and will feature Preds players, former players, and other special guests. And we have also gone virtual this year, so that means you can watch the show online via 102.5 The Game's Twitch, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and thegamenashville.com. Smashville Live brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka and Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. To view or listen to past shows, go to thegamenashville.com/Smashville Live. Looking forward to hosting that tonight. Matthew Olivier, really interesting journey to get to the NHL, and Philip Forsberg and that glorious mustache. Always some interesting things to say, and looking forward to hosting that tonight with C-Mace. It's going to be a lot of bald beautifulness that you can see live on our streaming.
I was going to say, that mustache, those domes, it's a lot of eye candy to go with some good conversation.
Yeah, it's going to be great. We're really looking forward to that. Speaking of the Nashville Predators, Adam Vingan from The Athletic, who will join us here in about 12, 13 minutes or so, had an interview posted this morning with Predators general manager David Poile. And the title of the article by Adam is Predators GM David Poile on Fan Anger. Quote, "I'm living and dying this every day." And Joe, it's been interesting, and this is not necessarily new this year. I do think it's to a much higher degree this year to begin the season with Predators fans. There is a lot of anger right now with this team and the direction they've been trending in the last couple of years. And as Adam points out here in his article, a lot of that anger right now being directed towards David Poile and the general manager. And look, it makes sense. You think back to, you know, you've had some coaching changes. There have been three different coaches here. The roster's changed over, but David Poile has been the one constant for the Predators since they first came in the door back in 1998. And Adam asked David Poile about, you know, how he kind of views the fans' feelings about him in some cases out there right now. And I'm not going to read the whole thing, but part of Poile's response says, quote, "I can clearly see and don't disagree with anybody's frustration. We came so close in 2017 to winning the cup. I felt, as I think most of our fans felt, that we were in good shape for the next few years with the team that we had built. The last two seasons have been frustrating. It hasn't gone well as we or the fans would have hoped." And Poile goes on to talk about, you know, they've changed a significant amount. He's doing everything he can do on a daily basis. And if anybody thinks that he's happy with what's going on right there, he's got a different message for him. Number one, what do you think of the anger that Predators fans have put out there towards David Poile? Are you surprised by it? And number two, as you look at Poile and the job that he's done recently, where do you think he stands right now?
Well, the anger, you know, we've talked this week some about Mike Vrabel and how, gosh, the guy's done pretty well in three seasons. He's got you a division title. He's got you an AFC title game. But this Shane Bowen promotion, people are – I mean, I'm hearing from people, he better be on the hot seat next year.
Yeah.
I'm like, gosh, hot seat already. Huh? It doesn't take long in pro sports. So compare Vrabel, still, short period of time, success, but compare that to what Poile's done here for a long period of time. And also, I mean, let's be honest, compare the personalities. I mean, I think that's part of Vrabel is I think fans sometimes bristle at him because of how he – talks in his pressers. I mean, Poile is everyone's like favorite uncle, right?
Yeah.
So it is interesting that it has gone like this. I think this is what happens when you raise expectations. You guys can tell me way better than I mean, I wasn't here for most of this time. But over a long period of time, it's like, wow, look at what Poyle's done with less. Look at how he's managed to build this competitive team year after year. And I know they built up to the year with Suter and those guys, and it all went bad. But, I mean, for the most part, consistency, not having the same advantages, but then you raise expectations, you make that big deal, you get to the cup final, and it's like that does. That just changes how people look at a team, because there's the expectation that he mentioned in this piece with Adam that – this was going to be a long period of time of this window being open. I mean, I thought the Preds-Jets was going to be the absolute rivalry of the 20s. And it's, when will they ever play again?
Yeah. You know?
for anything that means anything, you know? So I just, it is what have you done for me lately, and it doesn't take much in pro sports.
It doesn't.
That's fair because people get asked to pay a lot of money for this stuff.
They do, and look, to your point about Poyle, like I think he was really kind of operating with one hand tied behind his back probably all the way up until 2011, 2012. Like that was when the new ownership group came in, and he was really allowed to go out and spend for the first time. Like, I remember when the Philadelphia Flyers signed Shea Weber to an offer sheet, and it was just an incredible amount of money, especially front-loaded. I mean, there was so much money that Shea Weber used to make every July 1st of how front-loaded that contract was. I used to call it, like, July 1st was the start of NHL free agency. I referred to it as Shea Weber Day, of just, like, how much money went into his bank account on that day. So I think it really took up until that time when Pekka signed his 7-year contract, when you were trying to get Suter back into the fold. Shea Weber, you matched the offer sheet. That was when ownership really allowed him to operate. And to his credit, they went through a dip after, Suter left and kind of had to rebuild that thing back up from the bottom with Yossi just coming into the league. They drafted Seth Jones. And obviously Barry Trotz, his tenure ended there, and Peter Laviolette comes in. And then they went through a stretch where it looked like every move Poyle made was working out. I mean, the ERAT trade to bring in Forsberg, still to this day regarded as one of the biggest fleecings in the history of the league. Ryan Johansson for Seth Jones. I mean, people knock that now. Early returns were really good on Ryan Johansson.
It's exactly what they needed.
It's exactly what they needed. They got a centerman that they'd been searching for, James Neal for Patrick Hornquist. James Neal came in, immediately was productive. Even Shea Weber, P.K. Subban. We talked about that a little bit earlier in the show. P.K. comes in and, has some injury problems his first year, battles through it, and then plays at an elite level. Like, every move it seemed like Poyle was making for a stretch there was working out, and that was leading to this team building and building and finally getting to the point where they're in the cup final. The next year, they're competing for a President's Trophy and a contender again for things in the Western Conference. And it feels like since then, almost every move he's made has gone the other way. And I think that's what's playing into this, too. The Kyle Turris trade. Granlund, as good as he's been lately, it largely has not worked out the way the Predators thought it would. Kevin Fiala has gone elsewhere and has played well. I mean, think back to Wayne Simmonds and Brian Boyle coming in.
Ryan Hartman, baby.
Ryan Hartman. Like, a lot of the moves that they've made lately haven't worked. Matt Duchene right now. I mean, it's still not getting the production that you expected Matt Duchene to bring you. So that plays into this too, is Poyle went through a stretch where it felt like he couldn't miss, and now he's really struggled lately in terms of making moves that hit with any sort of consistency.
So is Poyle bad as a buyer? Is that what it comes down to?
In terms of at the deadline?
Yeah, because I know it's not all the deadline. The tourist thing wasn't the deadline. But, I mean, he's been in that mode. He's been in the mode of, and never before, I don't think, right, with this franchise, of go for it. You're so close. Go for it.
Yeah, I mean,
that's never been the case until the last few years.
I mean, not this consistently. Right. There were moments, the Peter Forsberg trade.
Yeah. Right. Which people knocked that one. And he had almost a point per game with the Predators, so it wasn't awful. But it didn't work out the way everybody envisioned
it. That team in 07
loaded.
They were loaded, but they were also loaded with injuries in the playoffs, where they didn't really have a fair shot against San Jose because they were, the walking wounded.
Yeah. So he's gone for it at times before, but to your point, Joe, like nowhere near the consistency that we've seen the last 4 or 5 years. Like, he's made some great deadline deals before. Mike Fisher was a deadline deal. He came in, that got him past their first playoff series that year against the Ducks. I mean, he's had some that have worked out. But you think about, you know, the moves of going for it. I mean, I think back to 15 with Cody Franzen and Mike Santarelli coming in. A lot of people forget, in 15, that team was young. They're good. I mean, they're in first place in the division pretty much the whole year, and then fell off after the trade deadline with Franzen and Santarelli coming in. So,
and they were really banged up and still gave the Blackhawks a run.
Yeah, and that was kind of the start of the building process there, but it just feels like the moves have gone the wrong way as of late.
Yeah, so you stack one on top of the other, not working out. And again, 1 year ago, so I guess it's almost a year and a half ago, going into last season, what did we say? This is the most talented team they've ever had.
Yeah.
And so then it doesn't translate on the ice. And you got coaching changes. And it's interesting that so many guys seem to come here lately and then they don't perform up to what their level has been. They don't perform up to – so I mean, some people are like, oh, well, it's got to be coaching. Again, blue blobs. Peter Laviolette should never coach hockey again. Like, well, I think he knows what he's doing. You know, the coaches get blamed a lot in this league, but I don't know. Where's the disconnect? I mean, the tourist deal to me is that's the big moment that at the time, I remember what I wrote. I was like, brilliant.
And it looked great the first month and a half.
Right. But that moment to me, that's the start of going the other direction. That just was they're going to be paying for it for years still.
Yeah, and look at Sam Girard right now in Colorado. I mean, that's the other thing. I mean, and that goes back to, you know, being able to find defensemen. They find so many defensemen. I mean, Girard. Think about how many defensemen are in the league right now that are really good that are not playing for them, that were drafted by them. I mean, it's unbelievable. And some of them have retired. I get that. And it's not the same amount as it used to be. But, you know, Ryan Suter, Seth Jones, Sam Girard. They've got a lot of really good defensemen out there that was drafted by the Predators. It's finding those forwards to come in and produce. I mean, you're talking about a single-season scoring record that Paul Kariya established 15 years ago. It still stands. And a lot of people are like, all right, you ever going to get a guy in here that can push that and can break that? And that's what I think fans are waiting on, is for somebody like that to come in. And the Predators, they've had a really hard time finding that guy.
Yeah, and we've talked about Forsberg, you know, having another level maybe and being like a 40-goal guy at some point. And if you have enough of those guys, you can score a lot. But right at this particular moment, again, your two highest paid guys are sitting at no goals and combined 6 points. And so, you know, it's just, I mean, the Poile is, I mean, gosh, I walked into Bridgestone. I don't remember when it was. It wasn't that long ago, but in one of the little shops, they had the, like, Poile on the phone. Have you seen this T-shirt?
Oh, yeah.
What would, like, WWPD?
PD,
yeah. What would Poile do? Yeah. You know? I mean, folk hero in Nashville, but it doesn't take long. It's pro sports. And really interesting. I mean, good direct question from Vingan. We'll have on next. And, you know, another quote. We're going to end up reading this whole story here. But if anybody thinks, this is a quote from Poile, quote, if anybody thinks I'm content or happy, that would be a total misconception.
Yeah. You know,
I'm living and dying this every day to do my best. You know, I mean, obviously, he's trying to turn over every rock. But this is, it's kind of a weird, we're in this moment where it's like, is Poile about to become a big seller for the first time in a long time? And maybe, if things go a certain way.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. We'll discuss it all next with Adam Vingan from The Athletic. That's coming up. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Wednesday morning, talking all things Nashville Predators. And to help us do that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring on our good friend Adam Vingan from The Athletic. Adam, what's going on, brother? How we doing?
Good. Before we get started, I saw your poll question earlier. I do have a list of sports games that were very important to me when I was a youngster. Can I share them?
A list?
A list.
Yes.
Go right ahead, Adam. Just make sure your list is not like a Ryan Porth Call Your Shot Friday list and it's 12 deep.
No. I have four listed now. So I have the EA NHL series as a whole.
Nice.
Of course. I have NFL Blitz.
Oh, yeah.
I have NBA Streak.
Oh, yeah.
and I have WWF No Mercy.
Of course.
We were going quasi-sports.
Of course.
We were doing really well up until that last selection there. Way to go, Adam.
NBA Street is one of my favorites. I think SportsCenter had a tweet yesterday that asked which of these discontinued sports game series would you want to bring back, and NBA Street was my choice. I was a very big fan of NBA Street.
Joe, did you ever play NBA Street?
I did not.
What about NFL Street?
Why is that funny? Why is Porth laughing?
NFL Street was garbage. NBA Street is where it's at.
Good Lord.
Does this mean like it's like kids playing in the street?
Well,
this,
yeah.
No, No, you could play as
your favorite
current and former NBA players in 3-on-3. It was like our generation's version of NBA Jam.
Yeah. That's pretty much what it was.
Gotcha. Okay.
And, you know, Adam Vingan admitting online yesterday that he never played NCAA football growing up either. So I'm not sure his opinions on video games are valid.
That is wild. Well, he's a Duke fan.
That's true.
That's rude. Does Mario Kart count as a sports game?
Sure. We'll allow it for the sake of this discussion.
Why do you hate the wrestling pick, Robbie? Just because you hate wrestling?
I just don't really care about wrestling all that much. But, hey, if you like it, that's on you.
Vingan likes it a lot.
Vingan loves wrestling, that's for sure. Adam, we were talking about your article that you came out with this morning on theathletic.com in the last segment, and your interview with David Poile, and lots of interesting things in there. I'm not going to give the whole thing away, but just what were your takeaways, especially when it comes to the anger from the fans part of it and just how David Poile is viewed right now by some in the Predators fan base based on what we've seen on the ice and the trajectory of this team?
So, generally speaking, David shares a lot of our views on this team in its current state in terms of many of the things that need to get better, overall scoring, special teams, the play of the top players. Specifically, I asked about Ryan Johansson and Matt Duchene. But near the end of the interview, I asked David Poile about the perception of him among the most vocal of the Predators fan base now, understanding, of course, that the people who listen to 102.5, the people who have Twitter accounts that follow the team, people who comment on articles on The Athletic, they do not represent the fan base as a whole, but they are the most passionate, I would say, because they have chosen to read the stories, to tweet about the team, and those fans, in my opinion, clearly have David in their crosshairs. It's hard to believe now that I've been covering this team for close to 6 years, and I don't think I've ever seen the level of, I don't want to say hatred because that's way too strong, but the level of animosity toward David Poile from the fan base that I'm seeing right now. So I asked him about it, and he understands the frustration because he's frustrated too. And I think the thing that stuck out to me, the last thing he said about that particular question, and I'm quoting here, quote, "I'm doing everything I can on a daily basis. If anybody thinks I'm content or happy, that would be a total misconception. I'm living and dying this every day to do my best." Will that win anybody over? I think if you want David Poile to be gone, I don't think he's going to change your mind there, but he is aware of it. I mean, David is very perceptive about how the organization is perceived and himself. So I thought that was an interesting response.
It was. Adam Vingan with the direct questions. Very, you know, you are not afraid to ask those direct questions. Good job there. So I think telling quotes, and of course I immediately go to the comments, and a little bit of sympathy for him, but also some, gee, is this from last season, the little bit of a downward trend? We've been hearing that for a while, sick of hearing it. So Adam, I think you brought up something that I always struggle with, which is, you've got the sort of silent masses, you know, who aren't in here mixing it up on the social media or in the comments or on this show or wherever. So what do they, you know, it's like, how do you really gauge how a fan base feels? Like how do you really get a feel for that? I mean, I think it's obvious, like with Tennessee football, you don't have to, like, it's not a stretch to say the fans are upset and they are sick of this, right? I mean, you can turn around in this town or state and say, and find someone in orange, and they're going to tell you the same thing. But with Preds fans, it's interesting because, like, I do think this is so much of a raising expectations dramatically from not just one run, because the next year they were really good too, but a short period of time. And it's like you can never go back, right, to just being content with being a team fighting for a playoff spot.
Right. And it's hard, especially this year, because we're not seeing the fans in the building. We're not hearing the fans in the building. Oftentimes the most effective way for fans to get their point across is to stop supporting the team. Whether it's not buying tickets, not buying merchandise, not watching games on television. And that is hard to quantify, especially this season when only a couple hundred people have been allowed in the building for the first couple of games, or at least the most recent home games, before they went on this Florida road trip. And it is hard to base, and I understand the issue, of basing an opinion of an entire fan base on the vocal minority. But sometimes that's all we have to go on. And, the nice thing, sometimes it's a blessing mostly, but it's also a curse and a pain in the butt. But those of us, Robbie knows this, you know this, Joe, when you're on social media, when you write stories, you develop a community. Like, the same people who comment on my stories on The Athletic are the same people who tweet at me on Twitter. I mean, the comment sections of my stories basically have the same people in them all the time. It facilitates conversation. I read all of the comments. I think it's constructive sometimes. Sometimes it's constructive. Sometimes it makes me want to pull whatever little hair I have left out of my head. I think when it comes to this team, I think the fan base feels, at least these fans, feel like they were sold a false bill of goods. They expected to have won a Stanley Cup by now. And you're seeing the Predators currently in a situation where the Blackhawks kind of are right now, and the Kings are right now, and to an extent the Penguins were, and the Capitals were. The difference between the Predators and those teams is those teams won the Stanley Cup. Three of those teams multiple times, in the case of the Penguins, Kings, and Blackhawks. So those fans, I feel like, can live with the fact that there are some lean years, because at least the moves that were made, the big moves, the big contracts, led to championships. The Predators did all of those things and didn't win. And now they're kind of stuck in the middle, which is the worst place to be. And I think that's what angers the fans the most.
To your point there, last year, you guys correct me if I'm wrong, I think we heard booing in that place quite a bit, and much more than I can ever recall.
Yeah,
am I remembering that correctly?
It's hard for me to remember too much about life in sports pre-pandemic. But there was some surliness. I think so.
Adam Vingan from The Athletic on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Adam, last thing for you here. We had this discussion earlier in the show. Shea Weber plays his 1,000th game last night, an incredible accomplishment. And as we know, he's been such a good player for such a long time here. And it had some people on Preds Twitter revisiting the trade for P.K. Subban and saying maybe the Predators would have been better off in the long run keeping Shea Weber in the fold. Number one, what do you make of Shea Weber and his ability to continue to play at a high level at 35 years old? And number two, in hindsight, is there any merit to maybe keeping Shea Weber and not making the trade for Subban, even though we know the immediate results were very good after that trade for the Predators?
In the summer of 2018, after P.K. Subban had played a significant role in getting the Predators to the Stanley Cup final the year before and had such a great season in the President's Trophy year that he was a finalist for the Norris Trophy, I don't think you would have found anybody who would have redone that trade. The benefit of hindsight, of course, is that P.K. Subban has gone. His game has slipped somewhat. Shea has had something of a renaissance over the last year, year and a half, 2 years. So in hindsight, you wonder if Shea would have had that same impact for the Predators. But at the time, the move made perfect sense. PK had an immediate impact, and not just on the ice. I mean, I remember writing about this shortly after he was traded to New Jersey. I mean, P.K. Subban brought the Predators a level of visibility around the league and around the hockey world that never would have existed if he had never played for them. And I don't think you can discount that either because of how much of a fan base he has by himself and how many people became Predators fans because P.K. Subban played for the Predators. So, yeah, it doesn't look great right now, and Shea has done a remarkable job adapting to the league, coming back from these injuries. But I think it's too convenient to think that that trade would have made, that redoing that trade or undoing that trade would have made a big difference. P.K. Subban was a star for this team for 2 years. And I think what they accomplished in those first 2 years with him on the team may not have happened if he weren't on the team. So that's my take on it.
Spike it. Spike it to the ground. Big no.
Adam Vinken from The Athletic has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex. Adam, great stuff, brother. Appreciate you taking time to join us.
All right, I'm going to go play some NBA Street, guys.
You should. Attaboy. Nice. Very good use of your time. Adam Vinken from The Athletic here on Robbie and Rex. When we come back, we'll discuss that a little bit further. As you look back at the Weber-Subban trade, how many Preds fans view that differently now? How many Preds fans would wish that Shea Weber is still here? We'll discuss that when we come back. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. 102.5 The Game is kicking off every weekend with free beer. And who doesn't love free beer? Tune in all day Friday for your chance to win free beer from Bavarian Beer House located at 121 Opry Mills Drive in Nashville. Make sure you're tuning in for that. Coming up this Friday, looking forward to that here on 102.5 The Game. Joe Rex Road, we were joined by Adam Vinken in the last segment from The Athletic, and we talked about the Subban and Weber trade. Now, obviously, Shea Weber last night reaches 1,000 games in his career. He's having a great season so far for Montreal, 7 points in 10 games, 2 goals, and Montreal playing like one of the best teams in the league right now. And it has some people on Predators Twitter thinking, what if you never make that trade? What if Shea Weber continues to be a member of the Nashville Predators? You don't trade him for P.K. Subban. He sticks around. Would the Predators have been better off in the long run? Now, we kind of laid it out earlier in the show. The immediate returns, I mean, it's pretty hard to argue against this trade. With P.K. Subban coming in, you're immediately in the Stanley Cup final. You come back the next year, you win the President's Trophy, and Subban's a Norris Trophy finalist. I mean, those are about, in terms of individual impact, those are about as big of years as you could hope for from P.K. Subban coming in. Now, it fell off in his last year, and he was injured and just wasn't quite the same player, and then that was it. He was gone to New Jersey. Cap space was opened up, and now Matt Duchene is in. So it is interesting from the aspect of kind of the way the trade was discussed at the time was, yes, Shea Weber's still a really good player, but in the long run, the Predators are getting younger. You're going to have an elite-level defenseman maybe for longer with Subban coming into the fold, and it's not worked out that way. Subban's already gone. Weber's still playing at a very high level in Montreal. With all of that information in mind that I've just tossed out there, does it change the way you view this trade at all in any way whatsoever, Joe Rexrook?
No. I mean, unless, if you can talk me into that Shea Weber makes the difference for 2 more wins in 17, they do everything they did, which I have a hard time. I'm not sure you're right there. But if you can then convince me that Shea Weber makes a difference in 2 more wins in 17, then okay, we can talk. I mean, let's talk about, like you said, P.K. Subban playing at a Norris Trophy level for that team. And look, they lost Game 7 to Winnipeg. Brutal, tough loss. That team could have won it all.
Yeah.
But you're going to tell me that Subban, Norris level, so swap in banged up Weber, who at the time we all thought, oh, how much more does this guy have? Yeah. I don't know. But then what's that team's bottom line look like with that swap out? Look, it's awesome to see Weber like get healthy and play well now. And it does look now, right now, like Subban has seen his best days. But like you said, that payoff, you're 2 wins from the exactly why you make any move in this league, to try to win that thing. And you got that close, and I'm certainly not sure you'd do that if you don't make the trade.
And there is like very interesting parts of these two players specifically outside of just the impact they bring on the ice. Like, I don't know what it is. Like, there's something about Shea Weber where, like, every guy that's ever around him just raves about the guy. Like, I have never found one person that's been around Shea Weber and has anything bad to say about the guy at all. I mean, it's from a leadership aspect to the way he treats his teammates to what he's willing to do for you on the ice. Like, Shea Weber's about as good as it gets in the NHL from that regard. And then PK, it's not quite the same way, but there is a swagger that he brought to the table with this Predators team. To Adam's point, like, they have never been anywhere close to as visible as they were when PK was here. Now, some of that comes with winning and being successful on the ice, but I think a lot of it also was his personality, the attention he brought to the city. I mean, he's going on late-night talk shows. He's going on, you know, The Daily Show with Trevor Noah, doing all these different things. Like, he's just a different cat in terms of the way that he was wired, and he brought a lot of attention to the Nashville Predators. So I think both of those things are very important parts of what they bring to the table, and I think very good things about both of them, but just very different in the way I think that's viewed.
Yeah, and that's – I mean, that was cool for the Preds. I mean, ultimately, you want the results.
Sure.
And I think that that's the more important thing. I think another thing that got exaggerated some with PK was – I mean, people – I mean, look, people in Montreal, from the moment he got here, desperately wanted the story that he was a locker room cancer.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, oh, he's going to tear up a locker room and all that stuff.
And there is some smoke there. I mean, he wasn't very popular in that Montreal locker room, and I think you saw that in the first couple of matchups after Brendan Gallagher.
Sure.
They did not get along well.
Right. No question. Those guys can't stand each other, which happens. Did the entire Montreal locker room hate him? I know the organization was mad at him because he went on his own on the hospital thing, but I mean, I think here the extent of it was some eye rolling, like, oh, yeah. You know, this is a totally different thing. I mean, he has his own social media person, you know. I mean,
right.
This is like an international star coming into your team, so there's going to be some adjustment to that. But I think he brought them a certain edge that was really useful, and that's, you know, that's the bottom line more than the attention on the organization. And look, if Shea Weber, I think he's obviously a great leader, he's a good captain here. But if anybody thinks that, like, he's coming onto this team right at this moment and grabbing guys and saying, you get out there and you score, Matt Duchene, and it's going to make some difference, I mean, get a clue. That's not how it works. And the whole – this also goes into the Roman Josi isn't a good enough captain because he has beautiful wavy hair and he can front a boy band,
right.
And even though I think he is a good captain.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, and I think a lot of people don't realize the leadership style is very similar. So, look, I mean – we knew at the time the trade was made, this was going to be a trade that's discussed really from now till the end of time in hockey. I mean, it was a huge trade. It was a huge day in the NHL. It's easy to look back on it now with the way Weber's playing and say, yeah, they should have kept him. I think ultimately it was the right move by David Poile. It worked out, not to the degree that they hoped, but pretty successful run there for the Predators.
So we end the show talking about a move that worked for David Poile.
There we go.
All right.
That's how
we are. Congratulations.
That does it for us today here on Robbie and Rex Road. Darren Donica Chase is coming up next. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.